And our special guest tonight, Jeff Group. Let's talk about the law of attraction when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. We're with Jeff Grupp, and we are talking about the law of attraction right now. Jeff, what is the law of attraction?
Oh, George, this is about the most important topic there is. The law of attraction, that word comes from theosophy, from Blavatsky and so forth, that phrase, the law of attraction. I never really liked it, but what it means is, in my own terms, is your inner consciousness can change the reality around you in dramatic ways. Not as dramatic as Yoda, when the Empire Strikes Back making rocks float or something like
right.
that. But, I mean, if you want to increase your bank account by 3 digits, 3 zeros at the end, you can do it. If you want to develop a better relationship with your children or wife or something, done. You can do anything. There are almost no limit. The only thing that is limited by this is what's impossible. Can you make a square round? Can there be such thing as a round square? No, that's a logical contradiction. But pretty much anything else can be done. Now, this is one thing I should say is, George, this is so powerful, this stuff.
Yes.
That you have to be, like I say early in my book, Telementation, which is just basically a guidebook on how to do this. You take this really seriously. On the one hand, it's playful. It's fun. It's a little game. When things manifest in certain ways, it almost makes you laugh. Like, I never thought it would happen that way. And,
It's almost easy once you get into it.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, you can do it while you're walking to pick up the mail and you're walking down your driveway. You can do a little telementational act in your consciousness, and then bam, you see it comes about, in a few minutes or a few days or something. But yeah, that's what it is, essentially. This is what your consciousness is really all about. And this is, I know you dubbed my show sort of being about secret knowledge. Well, this is one of the big issues of secret knowledge, that this is what we really are. Now, it's strange. I've had a lot of Christians, even though the book is kind of written from a Buddhist and Christian perspective, my book, Telementation, a lot of Christians have emailed me and said, hey, this book is evil. And I say, well, how can it be? I mean, Jesus said your faith can move that mountain. He says, that he's called the mob of Jews gods with a small g. We've got real power here. I mean, a lot of the magicians, the Aleister Crowleys and W.B. Yeats and so forth, the Golden Dawn crowd, they knew all this. They knew that we were creating God's image, and they sort of, kept it for themselves. And I think a lot of people think they used it for nefarious purposes, which may or may not be true. It probably is to some degree. But there is no doubt that this stuff has been kept secret, and this is the real secret. Now, speaking of the secret, the reason I wrote this book, I've known about this since the 90s. Because back in, like I said, when I was back in my Buddhist days, I noticed that if I was in one of my deep meditational modes, which became daily at certain points, if I felt a certain way about something, it would come into existence sometimes almost right away, mm-hmm. no matter what it is. And so I noticed there were these stark correlations between my inner feelings and reality. Now, one thing, I don't want to, slam the book The Secret or anything, or some of the books similar to it. Those books have helped a lot of people. They're just, I've read them. They're good stuff. But the only point of my book, Telementation, I thought that was important is I thought they missed the mark a little bit in that they say, you should believe reality into existence. I always thought not only is that tough to do because that involves your thoughts, which, George, your thoughts are hard to control. I mean, try not to think about a porcupine for the next 10 seconds, and every single person listening just had a porcupine flash through their mind. I mean, it's hard to control, but one thing you can control is feelings. Now, that's one point. Now, the other point is there is good reason to believe thoughts aren't where reality is created from. It's your feelings that are where reality, your deepest feelings are where reality is created from. So the point of this book is just a small guidebook to teach people how to do it, to say, hey, it's, if you want to manifest things with belief and thought, it may be a little more difficult than the absolutely straightforward idea of doing so with your feelings. So that's the point of the book. That's what I think the law of attraction is to me. I call it telementation. I gave it a new name since it's a slightly different slant.
See,
your innermost feelings create reality.
Jeff, I would use this when I would go to sleep. I always believe that in your sleep state, your subconscious mind would take over and do these incredible things for you that you wanted it to do. Without pushing, without, barreling ahead, with the one caveat, you always had to be ready when the door knocked. And mm-hmm. when you opened that door, whether it was a job or a relationship or whatever it was, whatever you wanted, you had to be ready for it. You had to be prepared for it. You could get that great job, But if you weren't ready for it, you'd get fired. You'd bumble your way into it, and something would happen. Same with a relationship. And I've always believed that. What's your take on that? That theory.
I learned this the hard way, George. This is such an important point you bring up. I had a certain times in my life when I needed money between teaching jobs, and teaching doesn't pay a whole lot anyways. And so I would do telemetation, and sure enough, the exact same amount of money, no matter what it was, I was always kind of, you know, shy, and I would not will that much money into existence. It's just enough to live, for example. And I would always lose it. And I found out is because I wasn't ready. I would sort of do the telemetation of work. I would have the deep feeling about, you know, feeling myself as being a person with this money in the deep way that I describe in my book. But then I would sort of get relaxed and get used to it, and I wouldn't keep up. I would sort of go back to my old mental patterns of thinking of myself, feeling myself as being a person who doesn't have all this money and so forth that's needed, and I would run into a lot of trouble. So yes, that is, I totally agree with you, and that's a big lesson that people don't often, are not aware of.
How do you train people to do this?
Well, yeah, that's what the whole point of the book is. It's very, very simple. But on the other hand, it takes practice. I mean, I tell people early in the book, don't try to do this in 5 minutes, and if you don't, it doesn't work, give up.
Yeah, you cannot get frustrated about it because you have to stay at it.
Yeah, I would see a lot of students of mine would discover me on the internet and say, hey, you wrote this book. And then they would get the book and then try it, and then 5 minutes later, after not having it work, I can't find the deep feeling state, Jeff, that you're talking about in the book. So they put the book on the shelf. No, we've lived our whole lives looking outward. Okay, you're looking out at TVs and jobs and trees and whatever. What telemetation requires is that you have moments in your life where you look the other way. You have to feel your feelings. And to do that, you have to find out that there's two feeling streams within you. There's one, the surfacey levels of feelings, which we're all familiar with. I feel bored, I feel happy, I feel sad, or something. So we all know those, and those are easy to identify. What is a little more difficult and takes a little more, well, it's not difficult, I mean, it just takes a little bit more time to train yourself to do this, is you have to understand that there's another feeling stream within you, you know, that you find if you just look inside yourself and feel yourself a little bit. And that other feeling stream is sort of deeper than the surface feelings. But then again, it's right there too. I mean, you can find it just in a snap. And the other feeling state it doesn't change. It's sort of like a tension within you. Or one author I like named Hubert Benoit calls it a metaphysical tension. And I've called it the feeling mass. That follows a philosopher named Eugene Genlin he was in the Chicago area until he died. But he calls it the feeling mass. It's just that unchanging state of intensive feeling within you, and it's almost like it creates all the other feelings. If you look at your feelings, like say you have a feeling of love, and then a few moments later you have a feeling of boredom. If you look real carefully at those feelings, you'll see that they aren't different. One has the language of love applied to it, and the other has the linguistic idea of boredom attached to it. But really, at their hearts, the feelings are the same. So that's that second aspect of feeling. If you can find and get used to finding within yourself this unchanging sort of playful but intense tension in you, that's called the feeling mass. And if you can get there and feel it, and at that same point know without a shadow of a doubt that whatever you want to manifest is true and feel it as being true, it will happen.
What do you think of evil? Where does that fit into the equation here?
I used to not think it was real, but now I think it's a real force that exists. This goes back to when we were talking about dark ecstasy. It's almost like there's, when you're in that dark ecstasy state, it's almost like you can feel a dark force all around. And I mean literally dark, like a black cloud, of a black fog around. And some people listening might be familiar with Norwegian black metal, heavy metal music, and a lot of the people into that were really into what we were describing as dark ecstasy a little while ago. And they would describe, you know, a shadowy horned figure dancing around in the dark fog, a playful god. And then these people were obsessed with suicide. You know, some of the band members committed suicide and they burned churches. These were real dark ecstatics. So running into dark ecstasy myself made me see that it's a real force working in the world. And so I don't think it's an idea set. A lot of people, I think, just think it's an idea set. And, you know, maybe I'm wrong, and maybe that's true. But from what I've seen, it's something that really has sort of enveloped our world. I can't remember if it was Jim Keith. There's somebody wrote in their book that, you know, a lot of old Freemasons would call the planet Earth, you know, the dark planet, or because it's, you know, we sort of live in, here's my interpretation of that, we live in a playful cosmos. I know you've had Dr. Laviolette on your show talking about pulsars and
yeah.
that incredible work he's
sure.
done. You know, our galaxy has, you know, a bunch of pulsars arranged in the golden ratio, and it appears those pulsars are extraterrestrial tools that they're using for communication and so forth. And we live in a pretty amazing place, but then there's this dark planet here. So it's almost like it's a like, you know, Alex Jones calls it a prison planet. Almost like
yeah.
like that's what it really is. It's like this special place, and if God created ecstatic cosmos, then there's this dark place here, and it because it has somehow from, you know, maybe it's, a lot of people talk about the Nephilim existing, and I made a film about that. Maybe there are these beings here that, you know, they have, you know how George, like my emotion, my feeling can goes beyond my body. And they can touch you. You know, there's experiments in telepathy
mm-hmm,
that have been done.
Sure.
And maybe what they have is a dark feeling state or feeling set that is infecting this planet. You know, it's not different necessarily than what David Icke talks about, but, you know, the same kind of idea. You know, there's perhaps, you know, the force comes from consciousness and these beings are here. You know, it says in Genesis 6:4 or something, you know, they are in the earth. And, you know, there's a lot of dark things going on. So perhaps, you know, we have some evidence for this dark force.
This evil literally can disrupt you from the law of attraction. If people try too much negativity, if they have too much of it in their life, I think it's going to block them.
Oh, yeah. George, if you take a look at your inner consciousness, you find some amazing things. So we talk about feeling. Now, let's talk about your thoughts. Another aspect of your inner consciousness is, you know, we've all have this thought talk going on inside of us, this language. We're always talking to ourselves all the time. If you just stop for a moment and look within yourself, you can see that going on, your thought processing. It's just amazing how much of that is self-defeating. I mean, you're telling yourself constantly, I can't do this. I, you know, where does this all come from? It's almost like we have inborn in us this defeatism or something. So that's just a very tame way to put what you just said. The most extreme way to put that is, you know, tell them and take. I mean, I've theorized for a long time, if there are these dark beings around, like the Nephilim, or, you know, some dark extraterrestrials or something, that if, say, the Earth is hollow and some of them are down there or something, I've theorized for a while that they can't do telementation, because telementation, it would appear, is an act of, you know, we talked earlier about the creator, if God exists, you know, an intelligence. That's the entity that does it, and we're in that image, so we do it. So it's an act of ecstasy to do it. Like I describe in my book, telementation is, to one degree or another, is happiness. So when you start doing it, you want to do it more and more and more. Now, if on the other hand, you're practicing dark ecstasy and you fall into a non-human way of living, then it should be the case that you can't do it, like you just said, because you're not following the, you know, God or the intelligence that exists that creates everything, and therefore you're not following your own innate way of existing. So you can't do telementation from that standpoint. So yeah, the dark ecstasy, evil, or more subtly, you know, just thinking of ourselves not in our true sense, you know, thinking of yourself as a failure, thinking of yourself in defeatist terms. I can't do this. I can't have that.
Right.
All
right.
These things prevent us from being what we are, which is our telementers.
If you tell yourself you can't, you never will.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's what everybody's doing, though, isn't it? I mean, I so often I'll talk to people, and they'll say, I can't do this, I can't have that. I told people I was going to be on Coast to Coast. I said, yeah, it's the biggest radio show I've been on. And, you know, and people are almost thinking, oh, Jeff, you can't do that. I've known you for my whole life, and you're just Jeff. You can't be a person who can influence lots of people on the radio. And I'm thinking, why not?
I hope they're listening to you right now.
Yeah, right.
Tell them hi.
Yeah, well,
hi,
exactly.
People. He's doing well.
Oh, thanks. But yeah, why can't we be special? I mean, I often think about, you know, children in the school, you're taught, oh, you're going to grow up to be a doctor. Oh, you're going to grow up to be a garbage man. I say, why just a doctor? Why a garbage man? How about you're going to grow up to be an ecstatic spiritual being or something? Isn't that what Native Americans would teach their children? You're going to grow up to be the shaman. Your destiny is to communicate with the great spirit. Think of how different that is. You know, that, you know, you get that in your mind that you are special. You know, you're meant for communication with God. Your feelings are being heard by this great intelligence that creates everything. Think of that. Think of if we thought of ourselves in those terms rather than, oh, I'm going to grow up to be a doctor or a computer scientist or work at McDonald's. I mean, there's a difference there. One is filled with hope and bliss and truth, and the other is sort of an artificial way of looking at ourselves.
When I was younger, I mean way younger, Jeff, I used to contemplate, hey, would you want to get into politics one day? Maybe you'd be the president. and you know, I kind of like stuck it in the back of my head, went into broadcasting, you know, kept doing my thing. Lo and behold, a couple of years ago, major article in WorldNet Daily that I could be a presidential candidate. And, you know, I looked at that and I said, what are the odds of some little boy thinking, hey, you know, maybe I want to be a president one day, as kids do. And then seeing that in print as an adult, it's kind of eerie, I got to tell you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I had that told to me as well, you know, hey, maybe, Jeff, you can grow up to be the president. But then I thought later in life, you know, that was strange. Why did people pick that one? I mean, because the president is becoming less and less admirable through the years. You know, there's Clinton and then...
Yeah, I know.
And so, I mean, why wouldn't it be the case that someone would tell me, hey, Jeff, you're going to grow up to be happy or something? I mean, I was told that much. I was always, you know, there's some goal. I'm supposed to be something other than what I am. I would think later in life, why can't I just be who I am? I don't want to have to work to be this thing that people approve of. And therefore, now I've reached social approval in our society, in American society.
Well, you're like me. You want to help people, but you also want to change things. And you know what? I'm in a perfect position now to attempt to change things, because if I see things that I think are wrong, I talk about it. I'm out there always looking for the truth. And what a better platform for me than this radio program that goes out to millions every night.
Yeah. I've heard you say, George, on the air that I love my job. And yeah,
I do.
What could be more enjoyable than helping people? I mean, it really is like a good drug. I mean, go give a sandwich to a homeless person or something, and you just all, for some reason,
open a door for somebody.
Pardon?
Open a door for someone, you know?
That
they're coming in behind you. Open a door. Let them in. It's remarkable. But people aren't used to that, Jeff, which is another facet I want to talk with you about pretty soon. Why are so many people angry these days?
Oh, wow.
You
That's
sense
a good
it.
Question.
You know what's out there.
Yeah, there's a lot of reasons that's the case. One good one to think about is humans are things that are taken out of their natural environment. I mean, we are made for being with our families. We are made for spiritual experience. We're made for thinking about philosophy. I mean, Aristotle said humans have a natural, for some reason, they're obsessed with curiosity. They're filled with curiosity, obsessed with knowledge. I mean, we're made for relaxation. We're made for exercise. We're made for traveling around and sometimes sitting around. We're made for all these things. Now, of all the things I just said, nobody's really doing much of these things. These are what I just listed are all the things that people love the most. And I know a lot of people out there would say, no, what I love the most is sit and watch, you know, 14 episodes of Seinfeld or something. I would bet you that if you did that versus some of the other things I just said, although you may feel, you know, relaxed after watching Seinfeld, something you're not satisfied in the way after the other things I just listed. So the point is that the human race is an entity of, you know, a collection of beings who are out of their tree. They're not where they're supposed to be. So of course we have an epidemic of Prozac. Of course we've got weird things like anorexia. You know, anorexia, George, doesn't happen in primitive cultures. You know,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's absolutely amazing. So, and that's a bizarre psychological, you know, output of civilization, it would seem like. You know, cancer is an output of civilization, but, you know, anorexia just pure mental, in many ways, output. So it's interesting to note that, you know, If you take a dog and put it in its wrong environment, it's going to get irritated. Okay, my parents, like I said, they just had their power out in Kalamazoo for, 30 hours. And my wife was there with them because I was in Croatia. So she took the kids there to have help while I was gone. And she said my parents were getting really, really irritated. Well, of course they were, because they're not, who wants to have their house at 44 degrees? But what if we looked at the whole human race like that? I mean, are we supposed to be living the lives we are? And I think we're not, so therefore we're angry.
We're going to come back in just a moment more with Jeff Grupp as we talk about his work, telementation, corporatism, and the telescreen. So for about 25 cents a day, you can be a Coast Insider, formerly called Streamlink. That's it. Simply sign up at coasttocoastam.com and get podcasting and downloads and just have some fun video chat right around the corner for you as well. So just go to coasttocoastam.com. You can sign up to become a Coast Insider. Jeff, what is the Swiss watch universe theory?
Oh, that's just the idea that the cosmos is completely non-random. In academia, as you know, we're sort of taught that things are random. Not sort of. I mean, that's what they hold, a theory, a philosophy, no matter where you are, philosophy department, anthropology, biology, physics, that things are random. And if I go to them and say, hey, how do you know things are random? Can you prove it? Nobody's going to have an answer for me. But then on the other hand, there's all kinds of evidence that the cosmos and our world and your daily life are unbelievably fine-tuned. We were talking about synchronicity a little while ago. Telementation, which we've talked about, is another example. A telementational act is a completely non-random. It's a directed event. Now, what if I'm telementationally creating events at all different times without knowing it, which we've all done? I mean, if you fear, how many of you had something where you really, really feared something, and then bam, the event to some degree happens? There's another non-random event. Now, the golden ratio we talked about, there's all kinds of other mathematical intelligent design issues going on that we've talked about. In many, many ways, I mean, the whole cosmos is a fractal structure to a dramatic degree. Very few people know how exactly what that means. I mean, there's no joke that when I say fractal, that means the part of something resembles the whole. The little piece of broccoli looks right, like the whole piece of broccoli. Now, the whole cosmos is like that. A person is a fractal of the Earth. The Earth is a fractal of the solar system of the galaxy, and so forth. I mean, you can really show this. I mean, it may not appear obvious at first. You say, wait a minute, a person doesn't look like the Earth. But, if we described it a little more, you'd see very clearly, oh, yes, they do. And so the point is the Swiss watch theory, there was a time where I was studying an author named Bonnie Gout, who wrote one of the most amazing books I've ever read called Beginnings, The Sacred Design. And she just showed in there how fine-tuned so many things in our world are, down to the way civilizations are formed. And a lot of that's planned, architects putting the golden ratio in the ancient Greek Acropolis structures and so forth. But a lot of it isn't. How far the pyramids are from the Nile, how far the base of the Nile, where the Nile River spreads off into the fingers before it goes into the big body of water, how far those are apart from each other, the tip of the Nile to where it starts to finger out, these all happen by numbers that are always repeating. The number 18, 81, 27. I started to call these solar numbers or intelligent design numbers, or Swiss watch theory numbers, because the same stuff's always appearing. Why does the number 27 appear all over the place? Rotation of the sun, it's in DNA. Look at vitamin B12, hemoglobin in your body. These things have the same structure, the same numbers show up. So the point is that, if you go to the university and somebody tells you, hey, everything's random, you may believe that, and you may have that theory in your mind and then ignore empirical evidence over and over that shows the actual case, which is, there's incredible patterning everywhere. It's almost like the whole cosmos and our daily lives are a Swiss watch. And it's not that we're not in control of it. That's fatalism, where, everything's controlled and we are just going through the Swiss watch reality. No, you're doing it. That's what telementation is. And then there's other things. Perhaps this creator we're talking about, God, has a hand in it. Maybe there's, dark ecstatic Illuminati members which are doing these exercises to help create, contribute their part to the Swiss watch world. So the point is, though, is everything is so fine-tuned that you almost have to start to think everything's completely non-random. There's many, many examples of this. And it takes a little while. You have to kind of think about this for a little bit, because we're so programmed to think everything's random. People say, hey, that's the way the ball bounces, as the saying goes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're trained to think that way. So you have to sort of get this in your mind that, no, that's not how things are. The way the ball bounces, you could be telementationally creating the ball bounce in a way. I used to, when I was teaching one time, I told my students, I said, when I play basketball, because at our old house we had a basketball hoop, and I would play all the time. My daughters would be outside, and it was a blast. And I would say to them, I don't shoot baskets with my hands. I shoot baskets with my mind, because when I was learning telementation years and years ago, I mean, I discovered the 90s when I tried to, you know, in the early 2000s, tried to really master it, I would play basketball and I would find out that my mental state always dictated if the ball went in or didn't go in and how it would do so, if it was a bank, rim shot, whatever. So anyway, that's it in a nutshell, this amazing idea of the Swiss watch theory. It's an anti-chance, anti-randomness model of the cosmos.
Where does this wireless internet, this connection that all of us have with each other, with events, where does that fit in the scheme of things?
Oh, wow. That's a big question. Are you talking about telepathy?
Telepathy,
or
intuition. See, my theory is, Jeff, that everybody is connected together. You, me, everybody. It's wireless. It's out there. It's in the ether of the universe. But I don't understand how it works. I know it does.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's not just a theory, as you know. This is, you can verify this. Either you, in many ways, you can go put a lab together and do scientific experiments, which can easily show that people are reading each other's feelings and thoughts. Or you can just do it in your own personal life. You can notice that, hey, every time my daughter says something, you know, starts talking about a kitty or a cat, I was thinking about one 10 seconds earlier. You know, you can notice little things like, there's a person who, I forgot the name, wrote a book called Parent-Child Telepathy, and you can do experiments on, you know, this telepathy everywhere. Telepathy makes up the essence of human existence. Now, that's one, a lot of your listeners probably know this already. Now, the ramifications of it are what I think are really extraordinary. And think about this, George. If you and I and or someone else are telepathic, that means that my consciousness and your consciousness somehow interact.
Right.
You know, they touch in some way, so they intermix. Now, that doesn't just mean that they exist at the same place or something. You know, they coincide over. It has to mean more. It has to mean that they penetrate one another, or they, you know, have some kind of interplay that is more than just being at the same place. So they have something very strongly to do with one another. So it has to be the case that the consciousnesses become one another. Because, for example, if consciousnesses interact by just coinciding, that just means they're at the same place. So you have to become more than just at the same place to have telepathy be the case. But what does it mean to be more than just coinciding in space? It means that you have to become identical in some way. You know, the things have to mix in such a way that they're not necessarily distinct. So telepathy, by its very nature, has to be a philosophy where people are not distinct, okay? I mean, you can get little signals of this when you're – I used to do telementation. If I had a big telementation session, you know, I did it all morning. It varies. Sometimes I won't want to do it much one day, and the next day I'll just do meditation. The next day, telementation, whatever. But I'll notice if I have really strong meditation times, I can go around – we used to have a little market. I used to live in Indiana, and I would just go walk around there in, you know, in a certain kind of ecstatic meditational state, and I could watch people – coming into the store with a certain expression on their face. And then if they would walk around the store, when they came in my proximity, their expression would change. And I would do this over and over, this experiment. I walked around Walmart doing this, trying to see if it would work. And people would start, just for some reason, just all of a sudden burst out in like a happy expression or something. And I was,
we need more of that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know you've got people on your show, Dr. Dyer and so forth, talking about this happening. This is what society is supposed to be like. You know, a lot of people say, oh, Jeff, that's a dreamer's attitude. I say, oh, really, is it? Then tell me why the American Indians, you know, or not even just them, so many primitive cultures, the Penan in Borneo is a great example, P-E-N-A-N. I mean, that group is a huge population of people, and there was a book called Stranger in the Forest written about them in the 1970s, and an explorer went in there and found out they don't even really have a word in their language for rape, George, because then nobody can remember it happening. This is how people are supposed to live. We're so on the wrong beam in civilization. And if you tell someone this, they'll say, oh, you're an idealist. Oh, you're a dreamer. You can't have peace. You can't have, you know, all this, you know, love and togetherness. You're just a hippie. And I say, no, it's empirical that that's how we're supposed to be. You know, interfractality is what I call all that telepathy we were just talking about. I mean, my consciousness goes beyond me. It goes into you. It goes into my neighbors. And theirs into me. I mean, there's the old magicians would, you know, they would have the saying, as above, so below. But there's another one they had, as without, so within. I mean, my consciousness is going out there, and theirs is coming in here. The inside is the outside. You know, to distinguish the two, that's what's, you know, called the ego consciousness, where you think that, you know, there's just this matter, and it's different from me, and I'm just closed up here in my body and separate from all the matter around me. No, that's all false. And just a little bit of meditation shows that to be false. What we are beings filled with love that's supposed to interpenetrate each other.
Why is it that the ancients, the mystics, the shamans, understood how to tap into this force, this field, but modern humans really don't?
Wow. We could right away if we wanted to, but why we don't, you know, part of me thinks in my book, The Telescreen, you know, it's we're all infected. I mean, that's what half that book is about, how we're supposed to be one way, but we're this other way. We're ego consciousness humans, you know, which are spiteful and angry and petty towards each other, but we're supposed to be like the American Indian shaman who's feeling the great spirit and sharing it telepathically with his comrades. So, you know, part of me thinks we're, you know, separation from nature. You know, if I go to the forest, George, with my daughters, you know, because, I mean, there's forests all around here. I go walking around with them all the time and so forth. I mean, if I'm watching my feelings, you know, rather than just on autopilot and thinking about this and that, but if I instead, a little more carefully, exist and watch myself, I notice my feelings dramatically change. It's all of a sudden, George, like I'm communicating at a feeling level with all the trees around and the water, and it's like a totally different state of consciousness just kind of emerged just by my existing in the forest there. And I know my daughters are happier and they're running around playing. And everything is, it's almost like our view of nature of, you know, tooth and claw. That exists, obviously. That's empirical. But it's almost like there's a higher order to things, which our minds are just kind of made for. And, you know, perhaps just that separation from nature and then into the telescreen world we go. Maybe that's why, you know, because it does seem that if you look at an American Indian culture or other primitive cultures, it's not, you know, this 1 in 25,000 people becomes the mystic. You know, mystic being someone who sort of has direct awareness, sure, and experience of the intelligence behind everything. You know, it was like every other person, or, you know, every 10 people, you know, the tribe has 25 people and there's two shamans and they've got the real information. So, you know, maybe that's a big part of it, that we're really what we are made for. I mean, there's an intelligently designed cosmos with golden ratio structures all over, and we are mathematical beings. I mean, there's all these symbiotic types of correlations between us and the natural world. So how much of a disaster could it be for us to completely take us out of that world and put us into the telescreen world, you know?
What are they teaching in the realm of philosophy these days?
Oh, wow. Yeah, philosophy, I always kind of am a little bit hard on academics, but philosophy and physics and anthropology, I always have sort of, you know, kept from that, and I really like those fields. Philosophy is, I've published quite a bit in the field, academic articles and good journals and so forth, and it is all over the place, George. There's a heavy influx of Eastern philosophy, and that's actually my specialty, has been Buddhism and physics. But really, to say they're teaching one thing is, you can't, they're everywhere, and it's really productive. I mean, you've got basically everybody in the realm of philosophy is trying to attack everybody else and attack everybody else's theories, and it leads to this incredible proliferation of amazing literature. And I don't know, I just developed a great admiration for the field, being in it, seeing all this work and all this productivity. Philosophers are good skeptics, George. I mean, that's something that everybody needs a little more of, to say the least.
But they're also enlightening, aren't they?
Yeah, I know, skeptic in the positive sense. I mean, they need reasons to believe things. Philosophers are good at that. And therefore, I mean, think about it. What if something is, if you have skepticism applied to something and you tear it down, what's left? Ah, what is left is what we might be able to call truth, or the closest thing possibly to truth, or things that we know. So skepticism is very productive. So yes, they're enlightening because they, in a lot of ways, won't believe a lot of what the rest of the people will. I remember back before we invaded Iraq in 2003, a lot of philosophers would sort of get in their office and talk among themselves and say, you know, what George Bush said last night on TV is what we teach in our class is a logical fallacy. Or, you know, hey, where's all the evidence? You know, everybody's sort of in this frenzy of mental frenzy of, war fever, but we don't see the evidence that Bush said he promised for the WMDs. And then, of course, a year later, everybody started to think, hey, yeah, we didn't, but, it was a little too late. So, but anyways, philosophers, they're a fun group, and they're leaning more towards New Age theories and Eastern religions and so forth, which is probably a good idea because we've had, 1,000 years of Eastern religion not being present in our philosophies, which to get a correct picture of reality, you need those in there in addition to, Western religion.
I think so, too. Is this world changing so fast that we're losing control of it?
I don't know, George. I don't think so. I'm really optimistic about the future more and more these days. Back, maybe the early 2000s, I was pretty scared about 9/11. I always thought 9/11 was an inside job from maybe just 2 years after it happened. And that really freaked me out quite a bit. But more and more in the last 5 years, I'm more and more optimistic. And I see lots of good changes. I've got a specific reason why as well. I think, George, I don't want to make predictions. Predictions are not a good idea because they just always turn out wrong. But it seems to me to be that we're having a world where, to some degree, the people are going to start taking over things again. We're going to take over industries. There's a medical marijuana revolution brewing. Well, that could be a people-run industry. So far, it is. I hope that stays that way. I mean, a lot of the corporations are getting out of America, and, hopefully they don't, if they're harming people, they don't do the same in other countries. But, just speaking about us alone, well, hey, maybe we've got a space now to create people-powered industries that really help people rather than hurt people with, low pay and all the other, poisonous chemicals and aspartame and all these things that big corporations are responsible for. I have a specific
Rumsfeld reason. Again, by the way, with aspartame.
Yeah. That
he's everywhere.
Yeah, he sure is. There's so many things going through my mind right now. Well, let me just finish that one thought. I think that the reason that things could be possibly changing, and it could be surrounded by 2012, is because of numerology. Now, I know a lot of people don't
explain Explain that. Okay,
yeah, a lot of people I know don't like numerology, and that's fine. But one thing I can say with absolute confidence,
You're not a numerologist now, are you?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Oh, you are?
Tremendously, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, if anybody just picks up a book on numerology, see, with astrology you can't do this. Astrology, you really kind of got to find the good books, or else the ones that aren't so good will deceive you, or it's hard to figure out what's going on in them. Numerology is not quite that way. There's so many good books all over. I can almost just say, go just pick one up and start reading about your numerological code. It works.
You know our numbers lady, don't you? Glynis
McCants? Oh, yeah. I listen to her all the time. Yeah.
Good girl.
Yeah, absolutely. You're just shocked to find how accurate numerology is in describing your life. You will even learn things, I never thought of myself like that. Yeah, that is going on in my life. I never noticed it until I read the numerology. It's like numerology is this incredible, lofty science. It makes you think of, that verse, John 1:1, in the beginning was the Word. Logos in the Bible, it makes you think that, this mathematical intelligence that Plato was talking about is like some divine numerologist or something. But the point is here is we just changed our years. We went from the 18, 17s, 1900s, all that. Everything's got a one and some digit. Now we're in the 2000s, and numerologists, I can go pull books off my shelf here that will say, when you have something like this happen, the numerologists say, get ready for everything to change in some way. Okay, when you have because all of the children being born from 2000 on, including my three children, are going to be in some way pretty different than they were. And the people existing before that, they'll change as well, but not as dramatically as the children being born. So if that's true, and if numerology is as hardcore of a science as I just described, we can expect something big coming, and all these children getting to the age of, the first one's born beginning at the age of 12, we can expect, the next 40 years to involve some new direction on planet Earth. And the number two would suggest, I like individualism, George. I don't want to bash it. The founding fathers really stressed individualism and so forth, but it has its problems. And the number two in our year numbers would suggest now that we're entering a time of dramatic camaraderie and even communalism in a way. Now, we don't want to have an Illuminati world system use that against us and implant communitarianism in us. And, hopefully they didn't put that there beforehand to trick us, to get us to fall into it, if you know what I'm saying. But this could be a dramatic improvement for humanity, and I think I'm kind of seeing it around a little bit. So that's my real reason for being so optimistic about the future. But there's other reasons I can see things going on in reality. People are waking up more. You got your show, George, which is a huge show. I mean, you're waking up everybody. You know, there's Alex Jones' show so big now. There's lots of other little radio shows.
They can't sleep anymore. We're waking them up so much, huh?
Yeah, I mean, you can't deny there's huge changes all over the place.
Absolutely. Where do you get your books, by the way, Jeff?
Oh, best place is Amazon. I sell them at my website. I've got two websites, antimatterradio.com and zenflowerradio.com. But Amazon's quickest. They're a little cheaper on my sites, all three of them are there.
All right, we're going to come back and take phone calls with you next. Final hour with Jeff Grubb on Coast to Coast AM.